That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, bitch. What is your whole deal? Hey, bitch. Just tell us how you feel. You wished for a sign from above. Well, here's a podcast about boy sex, fucking, dating, and love. Seek treatment if you're boring as fuck.
When you were last on, you were like finally like,
sorry, yeah. So I was finally single. I was trying to go out and be a giant whore, and then just my luck, I met the perfect guy.
Yeah.
And so and I'm trying to think. I mean, well, yeah. So what happened was, we started dating in December, and I would say like immediate. I was really into him, and I'm not sure if he was into me, but in fact, I do think he was. I think from the beginning we really connected, and
yeah.
I felt really good about it. I also was like, I mean, anyone who knew me that like, I was so deeply impressed with him and intimidated by him in a way that I just hadn't been with. I guess I had never gone for someone I found to be that impressive or something. Mm-hmm. Like I was always dating people that were like
That's why you're never into me, because I was too impressive.
Exactly. Yeah. No, but I was like, well, there was just all these things. Like he's a features writer at a magazine, and he like grew up in Manhattan, and he like he was a fashion reporter for many years. So just like knows, you know, would like travel, go to all the fashion weeks, like four times a year. And, you know, I was
yeah.
like, when I first met him, I was like scrolling through his Instagram, and his Instagram is like all, you know, fashion shows and celebrities and whatever.
He's someone who could exist in the Sex and the City universe.
Exactly. No, it really, that is ultimately what it is like he got the tail end, I would say, of like the magical 90s. Like he sort of like started his career just in time, like right out of college, when you could sort of like still work at a magazine. And you could still, I think it also helped that he was like from New York and like knew how everything worked and like grew up with a lot of, you know, whatever. But I was just like immensely impressed by that. And also just by the fact that like he seemed like such an adult and, you know, wasn't like
Pilates once a week.
Yeah. Just like, and I mean, also like there's something so infantilizing about being a comedian, shocking to say, where it's like, you know, everyone is doing the type of thing that most people do only in their early 20s, like throughout
yeah.
their 30s. It's just like, yeah, you do it until you get a big opportunity that enables you to no longer live like with a bunch of roommates in Bushwick or something. Like,
yeah.
And so then you sort of like, when you surround yourself with comedians, myself included, by the way, I mean, I was not living in luxury when I met Matthew. Like when you surround yourself with comedians, then you sort of think that's how everyone in New York lives, and you forget that people just like have normal lives and like normal
totally.
Careers.
God, it's so true.
And I was like, and I also like, I have a few close friends from college, but over the years I have lost touch with a lot of people that are like the more mainstream, normal, like just people who work in advertising. So I was just sort of like gobsmacked. I was like, wait, you're like a normal adult with like nice clothes and like a cool job, but you're not like severely mentally like destabilized.
Oh my God, that is so real.
You have health insurance that doesn't come from a governing body that has a televised award show once a year.
I remember I used to like walk by Trader Joe's like around 6 p.m. and be like, what would it be like if I just like went to the grocery store and made dinner in my apartment instead of like traipsing around to 17 bar shows and drinking 45 chocolates and sucking some guy's dick.
I know. I know it's true. I remember like early on in our relationship, I had like, you know, I was doing a lot of, because this was pre-pandemic and I was doing shows like almost every night, and like often I would like not have time to have dinner. So then I would have like a bodega like ham sandwich at 10 for dinner. Yeah. And he would sort of like lovingly make fun of me for it. And I remember being like, that's not weird. That's normal. Like,
yeah.
It just like, had never occurred to me that that is like an out of the ordinary thing.
Totally. When I get to LA, I'm making dinner. That's that.
And yeah,
that's
it was nice. That was the only nice thing about being in LA for a few months, was like having a car and just feeling like I had some control over my life. Whereas here, I mean, this is the last time I'll say this, but here I am 31. I'm in a basement in a hospital gown doing a podcast on the floor. I didn't know. People don't do this in LA in this way.
No, it's true. It's true.
I will say that. Wait, what was I going to say?
Oh, this really, Catherine, you really are serving rom-com.
I know. I've actually been feeling like really peaceful and like together and happy. And this is just like waking up this morning, I was like, no, it's a journey, isn't it?
Yeah. What was he going to say?
Do you feel like now the version of you now is more in line with like Matthew's actual adult lifestyle? Like now you're part of
it. Could you exist in the Sex and the City universe now?
I mean, to be honest, I'm sort of just, I think that I genuinely think, not to say that I have everything figured out, because I absolutely don't, but I think the pandemic and taking a like lockdown and taking a break from the comedy lifestyle really actually helped me recenter and reprioritize things and contextualize things in a better way. And like, I used to really, and this is a big part of this, was the fact that I started doing comedy in Boston, where everything is so like, you gotta pay your dues, you gotta go out and write jokes, you gotta do like, you gotta do a joke at 50 open mics before doing it at a real show, like you gotta write a new hour every year, blah. And it was so this thing where I was like, yeah, if you just zoom out a little bit, you realize like this is like, you know, watching like a documentary about Marc Maron or something. Like, this is not real life. Like, and it's actually a better use of your time to do other forms of writing and to prioritize having life experiences that could then inspire you to make better work that you can't do if you are just like literally at open mics all the time. And so I think that, I mean, do I think that like being in a happy relationship and specifically with someone I respect, like probably like helped me, maybe, but I also, yes, it did. but also, I think part of it was just sort of like growing up a little bit, because I was I really was still in this, I don't know, unhealthy cycle of comedy brain, if you will.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I know. But, I feel like, yeah.
But I do think, I don't know. I just basically used to think, and I don't think I would ever put this in such blunt terms, but when I look back, I'm like, did I think anything that wasn't doing stand-up comedy was a waste of time? Like, sort of. And that's not good.
I know.
I've had a similar realization over the past few years. Like, I finally feel now like, oh, I actually just care about like cooking a stew sometimes.
Yeah. I think it's twofold. I think it's both like caring more about non-work things and being like, it's important to read books. It's important to like spend quality time with people you care about that cannot advance your career, like blah, blah.
Totally.
I think that's important. But then also, even when you are focusing on work stuff, it's important to sort of like have a more holistic approach where you're like, maybe attending other forms of art will inspire me to create other kinds of work. Like maybe going outside my comfort zone is good. Like going to theater is like way more beneficial than going to a show or something. You know what I mean?
To like, the Philharmonic and praying to God you don't vomit.
Yeah, I mean, my next hour is all about classical music, and yes. I could not have done that if I hadn't been in the Philharmonic.
So it's been 4 years. How do you keep the... Great. Well, you said 2019, didn't you?
December.
End of it.
So it's been like three years in a financial quarter.
How do you keep the romance and the sexual excitement alive?
That is a great question.
Are you guys ope?
We are not ope. This has been, I definitely should not be talking about this on a podcast, but...
we don't have to.
This is, I mean, it's fine. This has been sort of like an ongoing conversation because we're sort of like... I have to say, I feel very satisfied, if I may be so bold, in our sex life.
Yeah.
I think both of us feel very comfortable with the fact that, like, at some point soon, we will be open. And we are very, like, we feel very confident about, like, the fact that we'll be together, you know, hopefully forever. And we're both sort of like, well, yes, we're not going to be the last people each of us has sex with. So like at some point we will be open.
Yeah.
But I think it's a negotiation of like when that'll happen, how that'll happen, what the rules will be. It's sort of like also not wanting to rock the boat if we're like both generally speaking happy. But I will say the specifics of my own relationship aside, the fact that literally everyone I know is having sex like 6 times a day does like fuck with your head.
Totally.
Who's having like, sex 6 times a day?
Every gay man.
Like, oh my God.
Like it's truly like, oh, sorry. I just dropped something. It's truly now more than ever.
Really?
Don't you feel, Pat?
Kind of sometimes. I mean, I will say my sexual appetite diminished in my last relationship and it has left me feeling very insecure around the idea of like lasting romantic connection or something. Mm-hmm. Or like it's left me with this firm belief of like the temporality of intimacy or something, or like excitement at least.
Yeah. So yeah. This is something I've been I've been thinking about this a lot in terms of like basically, obviously, if you take like the most stereotypical form of like gay male relationship and then the most stereotypical form of like straight relationship, it's like, you know, the sort of like party line is like gay men have figured it out because they are able to like have both intimacy and also be open and not have intimacy be tied to sex.
Yeah.
And
that, gay like, men crack the code. Gay men crack the code.
I mean, you hear it all the time. You hear it from straight people all the time, quite frankly. And it is interesting to see at this point, we're old enough that we know many gay men who have been in like really long-term relationships, like 10, 15 years. And sometimes I'm like, have they just rebranded the same problems that straight people have? It's sort of like if a straight couple, like a monogamous straight couple, the stereotype is like, you get to a point where you no longer have sex and you resent each other. And like the guy's like watching porn all the time. And the woman gives him a blowjob once a year on his birthday, half-heartedly, like through tears, you know?
And Deborah from Raymond is in her bed putting lotion on saying, exactly. I'm not in the mood.
Yeah, exactly. So then you're like, okay, so is the equivalent of that for gay men that because they're open, both members of the relationship are having a ton of sex outside the relationship, but then suddenly they look at each other and they're like, wait, have we not had sex in 3 years?
I know.
And I'm like, it's sort of its own thing. It's like, it doesn't have media representation, but it's there.
Well, when you said the thing about like gays having sex 6 times a day, I was thinking of like, we have a friend who like had a kind of fast and furious romance that like felt very sexually exciting, and then but then it like burned so quickly, you know what I mean? Like then it was over like as quickly as it started. Yes. And so it's like, I don't want either of those things. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, of course the dream is like just having like, it's like Wallace Shawn and Deborah Eisenberg. It's like the dream is just having like a long-term, very productive, intimate partnership. And if you're sort of a sexual whore, then also like being open and having like no strings, you know, just like being able to have sex without it being a big deal with anyone.
Totally.
Anyone.
Yeah. I will say, Pat, I think sometimes like in my relationship when we stopped having sex, it was actually, it wasn't really about, it was about, yeah. So, not to be, it's such, it sounds so cliche, but it was like about so much more. It had nothing to do with sex. It was like our, the way you talk about how you admire Matthew and stuff, like I just wasn't feeling any of that. And so then you don't want to fuck them, obviously.
Yeah, well, that's interesting.
I would say actually something that I've learned in this relationship, and in fact in many of my friendships like over the last few years, is just how important mutual respect is. Which is, it's like a weird thing to sort of define or put a label on, but like it simply is true that you will never have a successful, or not successful, but a productive like friendship or relationship or even family relationship if it's not based on just like a base level respect. Like just respecting someone as a person.
Yeah, totally. That's really interesting. Wait, so we should almost like...
Oh yeah, so what's your dream? I know, I could talk for Ov.
Oh my God, are we like almost done?
Well, kind of. I feel an anxiety about taking up too much of your time, to be honest.
Oh my God, please do not worry. I feel an anxiety about Catherine being legitimately ill and wearing a hospital gown.
I'm just really sorry.
No, I could talk for hours, but okay. Please tell me when to stop.
Let's get a snapshot of who you are now, because are in this transitional phase.
Yes. So in terms of like career stuff, wow, this is really, you can sort of tell that I haven't been in therapy for a while because I'm like, finally, listen.
I love it. But it's also happening because I also haven't seen you in too long. I'm like, oh good, I'm really getting the updates.
I know. I was thinking like, you know, when I first did this podcast, I feel like the three of us were friends, but we weren't like super, super close. And now it's like, Pat and I text like very often. And then Catherine, yeah. I feel like you're constantly filming in Iceland with Bjork. but then like whenever you're here, it's like, I feel a sense of urgency to be like, all right, we're getting a drink and we're
totally.
Like,
no, I know. I really haven't been in New York like at all this whole year. So I just haven't seen anyone really, but
yes, who am I? Okay. So in terms of career stuff, so I've always sort of like, I mean, I've always had this like side, not but like double career where like, because I used to have a job that was sort of like being like a researcher and editor that I would do during the day when I would like do stand up at night. I then like, because I used to do that and because I have those skills, I ended up like getting this job at Gawker as an editor and like getting other things here and there that are like more related to that kind of writing and editing than comedy writing.
Yeah.
And I used to be sort of like, I guess, insecure about feeling like I was half-assing two things rather than like committing to one thing. And I would always, and this is like an irrational fear because no one is actually thinking about you as much as you're thinking of yourself, but I would always be like, okay, so people in media don't take me seriously because I do comedy, and people in comedy don't take me seriously because I like have a quote unquote day job that is like a real job.
Yeah.
And so they don't think of me when they are like, you know, whatever,
but
just filling a writer's room or casting or whatever.
Yeah.
when in fact it's like all I want is to do that. So like last time, basically very soon after the last time we talked, I left my old job and I was like, okay, I'm like fully committing to comedy. And then I had like a few like TV writing things in a row. None of them were super long term. It was like a mini room or like a 4 week thing or like a 5 week thing. And I just never felt like I cracked the code. And honestly, to this day, even though I have now dedicated like most of my adult life to it, I'm like, do I know how the industry works?
The less I want to know.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
It's actually so disheartening. It's so upsetting. It's like, that's why when you do have a good project, it's just like, so I feel so lucky and grateful because everything in between is just absolute chaos.
It's hell. And totally. I actually think as a form of self-preservation, I legitimately like, I'm not as curious as I should be about how it works. Like sometimes someone will start telling me something about like, you know, the writer's strike or something I should know about. And I'm sort of like, all of this, when you add it up, is so depressing. And so like,
totally.
if, I actually know what I'm getting into, I will stop doing it and I will go, I will become a teacher.
Yeah, 100%. I don't feel like I know how a writer's room works despite being in one. I don't feel like I know what the writer's strike is about despite the fact that like it will have a huge impact on my life. And I don't feel like I know what anyone's job is even when I'm working closely with them. Yes. And no one tells you.
And also don't get me started about how do people make money.
Oh, well, you
can't. Could not even, like when someone is like, oh yeah, like, you know, he wrote like one indie movie, but now he mostly is just like a script doctor for hire and makes like $5 million a year. I'm like, all right, well, can I do that?
Yeah, totally.
Well, it's also really hard, like with how much you have to pay reps to make like higher than a certain amount I've found, where it's like, you hear all these numbers and you get excited and then like immediately you start to realize how inflated they are. And it's really crazy. I know. And I'm starting doing this thing. Whenever my reps like tell me how much money I made last year, now I'm like, well, where is it? Cause I didn't see any of that. Like,
I know.
Where
so, is yeah. it? I sometimes didn't people it. Will, sometimes people that are like, that listen to my podcast Straighter Lab will either like either like comment or like mention in like a sort of Apple review or something. Like they'll sort of imply that it's like, I think sometimes the way they talk about us, I'm like, oh, I can tell you think we're making like an insane amount of money.
1,000%.
Like, oh my God.
If you
I
knew
know.
How little money we make a year, like you would literally be like, not only am I not mad at you, I would like to donate to a GoFundMe.
Totally. I would no, say a lot of peers always... lately have been texting, being like, wait, so can I ask a personal question? Like, how much do you guys make from the pod? I'm like, oh, that's so easy. Like $0.
Every like, I would say like once a year, I make the dark, dark decision to briefly look at our iTunes reviews. And it's just absolutely harrowing the things people say. And they do assume that we're like laughing all the way to the bank. I'm like, sweetie, I don't know how many times I can tell you. But I love doing my podcast with my friends. And I could talk to you both for 100 hours, even with neurovirus coursing through my guts.
let me just finish my, yes, I feel please. Like I keep, I've been very,
Girl,
not to stigmatize, but I've been very ADD today. And, okay. So I was like, so basically I left my old job. Then I was like, really, I was like, all right, I'm going to commit to comedy. I had a string of like short-term writing jobs. And I really did feel like, oh, this is like what I've always wanted. Like I feel like I have a sort of momentum, blah, blah, blah. And then sort of out of nowhere, I got the opportunity to do Gawker. And part of me was like, wait, I said I wouldn't like my whole plan was to like commit to comedy and never go back to media. But then I was like, yeah, but this is a one job. Like, again, like as an old Gawker reader, like as like I feel like 23-year-old me would like hate me if I didn't take this or whatever.
Totally, yeah.
So so then I basically like did that for a year and a half and put a lot of stuff on pause. And so now where I am now, this is building up to who I am now. Where I am now is sort of like rebuilding, like being like, bet you forgot, what's that thing that's like Emma Roberts where she's like, bet you thought you'd seen the last of me or whatever. It's from Scream Queens. Anyway, my point is that I'm now like, I really feel a real sense of urgency to be taken seriously in like our world.
I think you are.
I think first you're of all, extremely
think
seriously.
I think your complex around the Gawker thing is like, I think comedians want like, that's a job I would have wanted so badly. Do you know what I mean? Like,
and to be clear, I loved it. Like, I loved it. I loved all my coworkers. It was like the most, it was such a good experience and I wouldn't trade it for anything. I'm just very aware of the fact that like, there's only one timeline. And in this timeline, I chose this thing. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, I lost other, or in my mind, at least, who knows, maybe there would have been no opportunities for that year and a half. And one of the reasons why I was like so happy to have it is because it was like during a pandemic when I wasn't getting that many opportunities, to be honest, anyway. And it's not like people were like lining up around the block to give me a writing job for Ginny in Georgia.
Right. I will also say that I believe I felt like in my years of doing stand up, trying to get a TV writing job, I always felt like this is the path to getting it. And like, then when you get it, it's like everyone else's is stand ups that, you know,
totally,
and I've any room I've been in, if you add up all the other stand ups that have been in them? The answer is one. There's one other stand-up I've ever, and everyone else, like, I'm like, I don't understand how you got this, but it's from like other, like writing for websites or like that kind of thing. So
yeah, well, the answer is that they went to NYU and their uncle is David Koch.
Yeah, David Koch. I love David Koch. And okay, yeah. So
I'm just sort of like, you know, I'm like working, like, oh, and in the meantime, oh, and the other thing that happened during the pandemic was the podcast, because Sam and I started releasing it like truly like April of 2020. And that was something that really kept me kept both of us going when we weren't doing stand up and stuff. And also, like, I don't know if you guys feel this way, but it is sort of empowering to be like, oh, we did that. We did something by ourselves that, like, from scratch, and
people
that wouldn't know about us otherwise. Why are you laughing?
I'm just like, I don't know what we think.
I have no idea what we think.
I feel like we're just like on this train and it's,
I know. Yeah. And no, I feel that way sometimes too. It's sort of crazy that, like, it's just crazy that it is in many ways like the longest last, like it is the most defining aspect of my life, is like hell or high water. Like, we need to release an episode every week.
Yeah, we did last week.
I also feel like it's funny because no matter what I do outside of the pod, I feel like this is still the thing that most people are excited
about. Is that
about.
True, you think, for you?
Yeah, like,
I think so.
Or even people who come to live shows, it's like because they're like, I love the podcast. So I'm like, wow, I don't think you understand how, like, it's cool to think of how many people it can reach, even though we're just.
No, I mean, I remember when Sam and I first met, we were very sort of business-minded about it, which is funny because we both now joke that we are the worst business minds of our generation. Like, when we look around and see, like, what other people are doing with their podcast, how much money they're making, how they're monetizing. Sam and I are truly like, we don't even know how to post an Instagram reel. Like, it's humiliating. Anyway, but when we first met, we were truly like, okay, we need to just start a podcast. It can be about anything, because we want to, like, build an audience so we can do live stand-up comedy and have people know about us from the podcast and come see us. And now, 3 years later, we're like, oh, we actually really like, we sort of fell into liking it. Like, it was a means to, like, it was, I would say it was like a means to an end, but then we like really, I mean, we also just got so much closer. And now I'm like, I mean, Sam is like one of the most important people in my life, which I.
Whoa, that's big. That's big. I remember when Catherine got back from Edinburgh the first time, that backyard, like, I'm back party you had, and I remember
a welcome home party.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
And I walked over to George and Sam, and I was like, what are these girls doing standing next to each other? And I was like, hi. And you guys were like, we're starting a podcast.
we were like, can you please leave? We're starting a podcast. we don't want you to copy our idea.
That's my memory of the infancy of Stradio Lab.
Yeah,
I actually have. I will say I love doing. I think when we started when we did our first live show for the podcast, we were both like, "What the fuck are we doing?" And now I think the shows are like my favorite thing.
We need to do more live.
The live shows that same. I mean, that is like
so fun. I actually feel like we are all lucky and rare in our decision to be New York based, if you will.
Totally,
and that keeps us grounded. I
know. Well, I've always sort of felt, Catherine. And Pat, in fact, let me know if you agree. But I've always sort of felt like I would gladly move to LA in a heartbeat for a job. But one thing I cannot do
1,000
is be in Los Angeles and not have somewhere to be at 9 a.m. because I will
totally
become insane. I will actually need to be institutionalized for hysteria.
I am buying the Blue Cloud Air One smoothie 40 times a day. I'm having it delivered to my porch.
The Hailey Bieber.
I'm suddenly waking up from a blackout and getting fillers like in a random part of my neck.
Actually was crazy, like, just being there. Every single person, the main topic of conversation was like, when am I getting my boat? Where am I getting my boat? When am I doing my boat? When am I doing my $2,000 crystal cryo facial?
It'll be interesting because I have like these 10 weeks that I have to be there where I'll have a job to go to. And then after that, I have to come back right away for my brother's wedding. And I want to race the next week in Brooklyn. And so then it'll be like, do I want to go back? Do I have interest in going back?
Are you subletting your apartment, Pat?
No, who would ever want to live here? You know
what I mean? I can't. So this apartment is just like, it's making me so sad.
So I will have to pay double rent, which is kind of annoying, but
You could at least try to find a subletter.
I'll write it off. No, it's like I'm still. It has. So it's not like set up. Do you know what I mean?
Okay,
like
okay,
this
yeah,
week
you,
I
you
need
haven't
to
really
do
been
work
there.
For the, yeah.
Is it close enough to Columbia that like someone
no.
Columbia affiliated? Affiliated. Affiliated.
He's like okay. It couldn't be farther from everything. Actually.
Yeah. I mean, I like it up here, but I don't know that like anyone would sublet. I'm also like theoretically quote unquote not allowed to sublet, which who knows?
Oh, whatever.
If, whatever. But it's by the Columbia track. So if you're a Columbia track athlete and you want to be close to the Columbia track, then give yeah. me a holler in my DMs.
Well, I will say last time I went to LA for a job, I sublet my studio and came back to it literally vandalized. So
no.
Be careful out there.
Wait, what happened?
This was like, well, I need to do like a, honey, this is material. I need to put this in my stand-up, but I haven't
sorry,
yet.
Sorry.
No,
I'll
I,
save
no,
it,
no, no,
for,
no, no,
for
I
the
haven't.
Stage.
No, I through a friend of a friend, and in fact, like I think a family friend of a friend, I
oh my
found
God.
Someone to sublet my studio. I used to live in this tiny studio in Park Slope.
I'm sorry, I have to be really bad. Bring it back. I have to pay. Okay. Keep going. Right.
But you keep going. I want to hear.
And basically, from the beginning, there were early warning signs. Like we would like we tried to schedule a meetup for her to see the apartment like three times, and all three times she just didn't show up, and then
Ew,
texted
I
me like
that.
2 hours later being like, sorry, on my way. And I was like, well, now I'm at dinner.
You 2 hours later.
Like, and so that happened like three times to the point where then she finally, quote unquote, saw the apartment when I was literally on my way to the airport. And I was like, you're in now. Like, I'm, you know, you're moving in.
Oh, my God.
Told me last minute that she had a dog.
No.
And there were no pets allowed in the building. And so I just had to be like, well, I'll risk it. Like, it's only
oh,
6 weeks.
That's so
like,
stressful.
And I'll just sort of like say that, you know, I'll say it's, you know, a friend of mine who's house sitting or something,
right.
And just like sort of hope that like in those 6 weeks, nothing too crazy will happen. Of course, the second I go to LA, my super calls me and is like, there's someone in your apartment. She has a dog and she has been walking around with a cigarette in her mouth all day, like
no.
inside the apartment.
How did you
and
find
like,
this person?
I'm telling you, like it was a friend of a, it was literally like I posted on Instagram, close friends. Someone responded
Damn.
And was like, hey, like my aunt's, you know, like my friend's aunt's like whatever is
oh,
looking
God.
Like it seemed you know it wasn't like a Craigslist person
right
and so then you know my super would be like you know she's walking around with a cigarette in her mouth and I'd be like well at least she's not smoking like, you know it's like maybe you're being weird about this but then I told her I was like just like he was being weird about that so just like make sure to be like as respectful as possible in the common area she like kept walking around with a cigarette in her mouth kept like having the dog like blah blah
it's crazy
then she wasn't paying me because I asked for, I had like a set amount because it was 6 weeks. And I was just like, we agreed on the amount. And then I wanted her to pay me up front. She didn't pay. Then it was just like 6 weeks of being like, can you do it on Venmo? She's like, oh, I'm banned from Venmo. Can you do it on you
this
know,
is
Zelle?
Crazy.
She's like, I'm at one of those weird banks that doesn't do Zelle. I'm like,
it's feminist.
Fine,
it's feminist. I'm at a feminist bank. I'm at a feminist bank.
Oh my God, a feminist bank.
And legitimately she would like make up these stories that were like, you know, the thing that happened with Venmo was that like I tried to Venmo someone, but then I accidentally put in like the one character that made the app crash. And so now since then I've been like, the FBI has been like on the lookout for me. So it's, you know, it's just like always, it was always like some big story, blah, blah. Finally, she has not paid me. I'm on my way back. I'm like, you need to be out of there by like, you know, 9 a.m. the day that I arrive.
Oh my God.
And then she kept being like, what time are you getting here? I'm like, no. That's not what we're doing here. Like, you need to be out at 9 a.m. It does not concern you what time I arrive. She's like, what time? And finally, I was like, I was arriving like very late, like midnight or something. And I lied and I was like, oh, I'm arriving at 3 p.m. Like, so just be out by 3 p.m. My flight is delayed. I finally got there at like 2 a.m. I walk up, it's 2 a.m. I walk up to the floor of my building, walk towards my apartment and see just like a pile of her shit outside the apartment.
Oh,
like a legitimate
no.
like giant pile of like random bags and garbage bags and whatever. And I'm like, oh, she's fucking still here. And it's 2 a.m. She's like still
oh,
moving out.
My
I
God.
Open the door and the first thing I see is her on the floor on her hands and knees
no.
with my bath towel.
No.
That is completely stained. Like a
oh
like a
God.
Light colored bath towel that she is using to clean the floor.
Oh
my
God.
Own bath towel that I like left there sort of because I was like, you know, it's
you're not gonna bring your bath towel.
And the bath towel is completely gray. I look up, the window is broken.
No.
Like legitimately broken, where I can like you know, reach the sky outside. And then I look to my left and the entire wall is as though someone like did ballet exercises on it or something. Like it's like as someone
walked on it.
And I looked at her and I'm like, you need to go. Like, she's like, oh, sorry, I was like in the middle of, and then she had sent me all these texts that were like, oh, sorry, I need to go back because I forgot to do the dishes. Like all these clear lies. Like, obviously, it's not you need to go back. Your stuff is literally in my hallway. It's not like you moved out and are now going back.
Oh my God.
I know the story is taking forever.
Did you yell at her?
I was just sort of like, no, I didn't yell at her. Well, the other thing is she hadn't paid me yet. So I needed to maintain a good enough relationship that like I could then.
Did she pay you?
So here's the thing. She didn't pay me, completely ghosted. I kept emailing her, kept texting her. I went through my friend that introduced me to her. She got in touch with her aunt. The aunt was like, yeah, she's been going through a hard time, like blah, blah.
Oh God.
And so I was like, you know what? Like, what am I going to do? Like spend my whole life being angry about this? I'm fine.
Damn.
I swear to God, 6 months later, suddenly I get a payment.
What?
Crazy.
With no warning, no follow-up email that was like, sorry, I was going through a hard time, but like, I know I owe you this money. Like, literally.
Maybe she got sober and that was her amends.
I mean, okay, well I guess I hadn't considered that. That makes me feel worse about the way I've told this story.
No, it's crazy.
But yeah. Sort of one of the craziest things that's ever happened to me. Anyway, sorry
really
to monologue for 15 million
No,
hours.
That's
no, I think
so
it's a good
crazy.
Lesson. It's be careful who you let into your home. It's a safe space.
I can't believe Catherine tried to put me at risk of that by asking for a subletting.
I can't believe I introduced you to that girl.
Actually, Pat, I have a really good person for you. She's sober now. Like,
oh my God. I feel a little bit like I might...
Okay. Should we wrap up?
Let's say, yeah. So, who do you want to be now, George?
Oh no, Catherine, are you leaving?
No,
she says that and leaves.
Oh no, no. Well, now I feel bad for keeping you guys. We can do a very quick.
No, don't leave. How about okay. I'm gonna go to the restroom and you
okay.
guys chat.
Okay,
I'm okay.
Right.
I'm okay. Sorry.
All babies at George.
Pat, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm like very much in a think. Thank God my job was supposed to start today. I was going to get home from LA late at night on Thursday and then go back on Sunday. That would have been so hell. And so now I have until Monday. I'm leaving on Saturday, so I'm just like getting all my things, all my ducks in a row or whatever. And I stupidly like made plans to like see people, and I'm like, it's not gonna happen. I need to cancel every single one of them. But yeah, I feel good in general. I just like need to like get my life in order. I have like a lot of writing I have to do this week before my job starts, and it's like so hard to like feel like you're making any progress. And
is
I
it
also
script
to, like,
script writing or prose writing?
Both, which is tricky because it's like just two separate things, and it's like it's actually the three-headed beast because there's actually three separate things. It's like one is script writing, one is prose writing, and one is like developmenty ideas.
Yeah, wait. I need to talk to you about how you structure your days.
Oh,
because
it
this
doesn't.
Is like, this is my current thing is like, as much as, you know, I could be like, wow, I didn't have time to do all these things while I was a gawker. Like, I did also really enjoy just like the structure of knowing exactly what I had to do every day from 9 to 5.
1,000.
Having that be like both creative and fun, and there was legitimately no way to, like, if I didn't do my job, like, something wouldn't go up on the site. So there was just, like, no way to procrastinate on it. And I'm like, is there some sort of, like, BDSM dom that I can hire to, like, make me think that there is a sense of urgency in anything I'm doing?
I know. I just got out of a job that started at 8 a.m. every morning. And, like, you know, 3 days a week, usually I'll run twice a day. And For those 3 days, at least one of them would have to be before 8 a.m. And so I was like honestly not sleeping enough, especially for the amount I was running, and I think I got in like a real deficit. And basically, since that job ended, well, then I went straight to LA and like truly didn't sleep for 5 more days. And then, like, since I've gotten back, I've just like literally collapsed every second, and I just feel really collapsy. But yeah, this is my, and when you're in one of those jobs, you keep thinking about the next time you're gonna have off and like how much time you'll have, and then that time comes and it's not like how you thought it would be. Do you know what I
I
mean?
know, I know. Well, here's the thing. Nothing is literally ever what you think it's gonna be.
1,000.
And
So yeah, I
that's
don't.
the title of my book of humorous essays.
Maybe let's wrap up.
Catherine
Do
says, sorry, my comp frozen. Oh, no. Well, I mean, do you want to wrap up Sans
yeah.
Catherine? Okay.
Yeah, let's wrap up sans Catherine.
Okay.
Do you feel hot? Oh, do you have a crush of the week?
Oh, you know what? My crush of the week is Richard Perez.
Oh, yeah.
I have been going up and down town raving about his show. I was like talking to a friend of mine who's like, you know, especially now, like through Gawker and through Matthew, I know so many people who just like write, who are culture writers, and
Yeah.
I'm like, honey, with one phone call, I could change your life. I'm like
Yeah.
calling up everyone
Yeah.
I know. I'm like, cover Richard, put him on the cover.
Yeah. Oh, you should tell them, you should feel comfortable telling them about me if you want.
No, I'm no, I really, I think Richard is so funny,
Yeah, he's so
and
good.
I don't know, I just, there was one night where I went to Cate Berlanti's show and then immediately after that went to Richard's show, and the two of those
Wow.
together, it just made me feel like it was such a, both of them were just such like breaths of fresh air in different ways, and I was like, live performance is
Yeah,
back, live performance is back.
totally.
And yeah, do you have a crush of the week?
My crush of the week, I think, will just be, I really enjoyed Erewhon while I was in Los Angeles. We went like twice a day, and I loved everything I got there. And I got these cookies that were made of watermelon seeds, and they were so good. And I was like, I think I'm gonna like it here.
Watermelon seeds?
If you had told me this a week ago, I would have said, there's no
Karen.
way. But I really enjoyed them.
Okay. All right. I mean, I am very susceptible to an Erewhon, to Erewhon-esque stories.
So yeah, so my question is Erewhon, and specifically the cookies made of seed.
Okay, love that.
Last thing is, do you feel hot today?
You know, I will say, looking at myself, I would say sort of chest up, I feel hot, but I think I need
Yeah.
to do a little bit more moving today to feel a sort of whole body high.
Totally,
But I would
totally.
say, so basically, like neck up, how hot I feel depends on the length of my head hair and facial hair. And I think right now they're both at a good length. And I feel like
Yeah,
I
it's
am
working.
editorial ready. I'm ready to be on the cover of even Allure magazine.
You're ready to walk in a
I'm ready
show.
to, well, that's the thing. I'm not ready
You're
to
not
walk in a
ready
show
to walk in a
because
show.
that would be full body.
I feel hot, I guess. I think that like I've been on such a hair journey lately, and like I felt like I had cracked the code, and then like I went through a phase where I was like, wait, this isn't looking great, and now
I think your
it's
hair looks really good, actually.
today. I feel good about it for sure. And I'm getting back into all my little routines that I had to step away from while I was in LA. So like that's helpful to me. And like I think I need to feel a little more awake, and I need to do like a little bit of like creative work to feel truly in my power, but I do feel hot.
Okay. Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Do you have, in terms of like productivity, time management, et cetera, do you have any North Stars in terms of like books or methods or?
Truly, no. The artist way was helpful to me once, but that takes up so much time too. And like,
Yeah.
I just like signed on with my advisor in my recovery program to do a really intensive, like a really intensive bout of like work. And that will take up a chunk of time that I would have maybe thought about giving to like an artist or something. But I did just get a book by that Lisa Traeger recommended. It was actually what I identify as a God moment, because I was in Vancouver and Lisa was there and she was like, I'm reading this book. It's so helpful with creativity. And I was like, oh, is it like The Artist's Way? And then she said, The Artist's Way is a workbook. And I was like, that's so true. Ew, I hate it.
She's like, and she's like, shut the fuck up. No.
And so she had this other book that was written by a American record producer named Rick Rubin. I actually don't remember what it's called, but there's a circle on the cover and it was a really distinct cover. And then while I was in LA, I was killing some time a bit and I was walking around the Grove, which I also love. And I went into Barnes & Noble at the Grove and like it was sitting out and I was like,
what is it called?
I don't remember what it's called, okay. But it has a circle on the cover and it's by Rick Rubin and the title has something to do with creativity. So I bought it and I'm going to read it I just started Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, which I know like everyone was reading.
Oh yeah, everyone is reading that. Okay, also it's called The Creative Act, A Way of Being.
Yeah, that's what it's called. It has a circle on the cover.
Yes, it does. Wait. Okay, so everyone is reading, what is it called again? Forever.
Tomorrow and Tomorrow. I feel like everyone's reading it. I think Catherine met a little bit ago. I just finished such a good memoir by a professional runner that like literally almost brought me to tears because it was about like the journey that your passion can take you on and how it can keep ripping you away from yourself and you have to keep finding yourself through it again. And now I'm like, it's time for a novel. Yeah. So I'm starting it. Yeah.
I'm but reading the most depressing book.
I just read the most depressing book. I hated it. Which what's your depressing?
I'm reading a book called Apartment in Athens, and it's about like when Athens was under German occupation during the war, and it's like about a Greek family living in an apartment where like they have to give a room to a Nazi general because they like went and stayed with the families in the occupied territory.
Oh my god!
So it's literally like this like claustrophobic account of just like people feeling like they have less and less freedom and that they're sharing their home with this like monster.
I read Young Mungo, which is like supposed to be about queer love, but it's like so it's about like boy in the woods being molested nonstop.
Matthew reviewed that guy's first book.
Everyone loved that guy's first book.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then you get the second book and all the pull quotes are like about his first book and it's like, okay, no one likes this one, obviously. And that should have been my first clue. But yeah, I didn't like that one.
Do you know what you should read, actually?
What?
Have you read Remains of the Day?
No, is it good?
It is so good. And it's sort of, it's just, yeah, it's a novel by Ishiguro who did like Never Let Me Go and Around the Sun. It's like his most famous one. And I think he won the...
Oh my gosh, can you see me?
Yes.
Hi. Oh my God.
Y'all, that was insane.
You're back and
I'm
you're
so sorry.
Crisper than ever.
My computer just fully broke down and was making these hissing sounds. Anyways, let me put my headphones on. What are we reading? What are we reading, boys?
Well, I was saying that I read a book that you recently read, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. I'm just reading it.
So it's crazy that that book, I mean, it really goes to show you, and it's almost sort of like an inspiring thing that like, even though we're all trying to follow these, like, we're like, what sells? What are people interested in? Blah, blah, blah. Then a random book like that, that from what I understand is about video games and like has a title that like makes no sense. Like you wouldn't know what it's about. It's like from an author whose name I didn't recognize. And yet it became like the single best-selling novel.
It gives you hope if you want to write a book.
Truly.
Because ultimately it's just about love and friendship. Which
and you liked it, Catherine? Like...
I did like it. Okay. Did you read it?
No, I haven't read it, but I was talking, in fact, to a book agent, and she was saying that it was like just like this huge success story. I knew it was big, but I didn't realize it was like the single book that really like people point to be like that was the big book last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's shocking because I posted like a picture of it on my Instagram story and everyone was responding, like, oh my god, changed my life. And I was like, let's calm down. It's you know, it's a novel. It's fun. But yeah, wait, Pat, what were you saying? I briefly, first of all, obviously apologies to everyone. My computer was being empathetic and breaking down much like my physical form, but I'm back. I wanted to know, what was the book Lisa recommended?
I don't remember the name
of
it.
Wait, I pulled it up.
It has a circle on the cover.
So it has been covered that it has a circle on the cover and it's called The Creative Act, A Way of Being. I am a little worried that Catherine's frozen again.
I know, we have to wrap up.
Okay, we have to wrap up. Okay, all right. Well, I truly love you both.
I love you too. Are you mad at?
I am not mad at either of you. I am honestly mad at Catherine's computer because I feel like she is sabotaging our really great recording. And I was looking forward to hearing who Catherine's crush of the week was and whether she feels hot today. And I am mad at norovirus.
Yeah, that's real.
I'm mad at, I mean, basically, it seems like all these people, things, and concepts are banding together to ruin Catherine's life.
1,000%.
I want to say in that sense, she is a flawed female anti-hero because she's battling against all that. And I think that we are rooting for her.
And it's it must be exhausting.
She's Ally McBeal. She's Hannah Horvath.
Oh, I want to watch. I've never watched all of Ally McBeal sequentially, and I need to.
I watched the pilot recently, and I was like, this is the most insane thing I've ever seen. Like, this is like Dada-esque weirdo. Like, I've never seen anything like it.
All right. Well, George, thank you so much for coming on.
It was my pleasure.
Okay.
Right. And I love you both. Goodbye.
Love you. Bye. Seek treatment if you're boring as fuck.